Good evening. James McCanny here with my Science Hour, June 20th, 2013. And a lot of information tonight. Tonight's main science topic, I will be talking about the solar spectrum. The solar spectrum, the amount of light and energy leaving the solar surface. And specifically, I'll be talking about the electromagnetic spectrum, what we call light. It comes off the sun every place in the magnetic electromagnetic spectrum, from the infrared, from microwaves, actually, all the way up into the far ultraviolet and beyond, X-rays. But the bulk of the energy that affects us here on Earth is actually near the visible range and in the ultraviolet. And part of the problem is we're not getting good reports about this from the agencies that should be reporting. One issue is that, and I have not seen any reporting on this, that the solar output is extremely powerful in the ultraviolet, meaning you can get sunburn, skin damage very easily. So you have to be careful these days about your solar exposure. The Earth's upper atmosphere should block a lot of this, and so it's not clear because, once again, we're not getting good data from the government agencies that should be monitoring this, and I'll be talking about those issues. These programs for solar monitoring have failed. And so it leaves the public with a very very incomplete view of what's going on with the sun. The fact is that the sun is highly variable. We always imagine the sun being big and it should be constant. And the assumption in the scientific world is that it is constant over very long periods of time. Millions of years, even. They're talking about the 4.5 billion year solar cycle, that we're a young star. And the reality is that the sun is changing on a minute-to-minute basis. So the spectrum changes, and this is part of the non-reporting because the satellites have been improperly designed. They've been designed by people who expect extreme long-term change. They're looking for 50-year patterns in global for global climate change, when the reality is the sun is changing on a minute-to-minute basis, sometimes by 1,000 times. And once they realize this, well, I'll go into all that detail. But that's tonight's main science topic. But the issue for the public right now is we have been receiving a tremendous amount of UV light. This is the bad stuff. This is the stuff that doesn't help plants. It can actually hurt plants. That's been pretty much off scale. And it's not uncommon in the summertime to have high ultraviolet levels from the sun. But it happens occasionally, sometimes in August, or if you're up high in the mountains, for example, on a clear day up in the mountains, in the Rocky Mountains, let's say, and you're on a nice clear day, it is not unusual to have high UV levels because the higher you are, the less atmosphere there is to buffer to absorb that energy. So you get a bigger dose of UV than the guy that's down at sea level. Also, I want to mention, too, I'll be talking more detail about this, but we have been receiving and continue to receive a lot of rain. And the issue here, this is not exactly normal. Why is it happening? Well, the weather patterns are clear. Right now, in fact, there's a big storm rolling through the Midwest, upper Midwestern states. It does not to be it does not appear to be a powerful storm, just average summer thunderstorms. But then again, this is the kind of weather that we might expect earlier in the spring, like the April showers, when it kind of rains every day, but it produces May flowers, is the expression. Well, we're getting the April showers in late June, so what's the story here? there again, I don't think anybody knows. I've heard explanations coming from the National Weather Service on various topics, and I always have to chuckle because that's just rather absurd, the kind of explanations that they put out. But I'll be talking about the solar weather patterns. The sun is extremely weak. We're not getting any Atlantic Ocean hurricane activity. If you look on a global scale, there are many, many, more than many, probably thousands of small microstorms scattered around the equatorial region of the Earth. And that is, somewhat typical, but we're not getting the big booming storms that typically would be occurring this time of year. A lot of Latin America is being doused pretty well with water, with rain, small storms that last for a number of hours and pass, and then a few hours later it rains heavily again. Those are the kind of storms that just... it's very difficult for some of these regions because they don't have good coping mechanisms for a lot of rain. So it does a lot of damage. But of course, that's not in the news because poor people in this world don't count. The only thing that counts is what's going on in Washington on the evening news. So with that in mind, kind of a summary. I'm going to look into the main some of the announcements I have for tonight's show. I want to comment about the wiretapping issue. I saw some joker, it's the best word I can use on the air, from the government this past week, and he's saying, oh no, we don't do that, it would be against the law. And if we did something like that, it would be against the law. These people are just liars upon being criminals. Of course they're wiretapping, snooping. They not only do they kind of snoop, they look at everything you do and record it. And the reason for this is because if, say, your name pops up on a list someplace, they have tens of thousands of people who simply sit there and monitor everything that goes on, and it's all recorded. Why is that done? Because if, say, your name comes up, or somebody's name comes up for possible terrorism or anti-government sentiment, they can go in and look at the thread of all of your activity on your computer, your Google searches, your telephone conversations. They can listen to them, and they can pick out a person and go back years to see everything you've been doing, to see if you're a terrorist. Sounds like the movie V. But that's what these people are doing, and now they're coming out and lying about it, saying, oh, we would never do that. And, of course, it's this I have to include here. I just find it comical. Google has a posting. When you pull up Google, when you pull up their web page, they have a posting, and it says, I'll read it here because it's so absurd, because Google is one of the primary web pages that snoops into everything you do. It keeps a record of every search you do, of everything you're looking at. They keep a record of this. So Google is probably one of the worst and government-owned and controlled entities on the planet. So anyway, Google posts this after the NSA security issue. This is a quote printed on Google, right below the search window in the middle of the Google page. It says, security and privacy are not optional, period. Stand with a broad coalition to demand that the NSA stop watching us. Google talking about the kettle calling the frying pan black, or whatever it is, the frying pan calling the kettle black, as an old expression. Holy cow! Google is the primary, probably the primary snoop source for the government and in the planet. These people just have no conscience at all. I want to also mention this filters down to every aspect of, down to local government, local police, and a lot of police now and state troopers, all those many, many, many layers of guys running around in uniforms and little cars, all are being trained in counterterrorism and things that they shouldn't be dealing with at all. Passing out traffic tickets is the best thing they should be doing because most areas don't have real crime in the United States. Most cops are out there passing out speeding tickets, just raising revenue, as they call it. But they're being trained, and they're getting this kind of psychological belief that they're somehow out there scanning the public for terrorism, and that's you, the average person, and you're actually in the legal system today. You are treated as a convicted terrorist as you go about your daily life. And so the searching, the snooping, not only are they doing it, they're doing it on everything you do. So take that to the bank. The person that exposed all of this is now in China in hiding and has apparently a lot of information. And, of course, to make a public claim like this, you need data, because the first thing the government's going to do is deny it. But I have heard that they are very worried about this guy because the Chinese government is protecting him. He's got data, and it could really expose what the NSA is doing. For example, for foreign diplomats, the Chinese diplomats were just here in the United States talking to Obama, and of course they're listening to them. Of course they're trying to slip bugs on them. Of course they're trying to use any kind of technology they have to snoop on these foreign ministers and diplomats. So, but China is very interested because China is one of the big hacking sources for the hacking information out of the U.S. government. They have had multiple entries into the defense system. Our defense system is completely, well, literally with its pants down because everything they have is on the internet, and they think it's secure, but it's absolutely not. So it's so absurd to put the high security defense information, things like that, available to the internet, thinking that they have firewalls. When I proved with my Calculate Primes work that overnight any security systems could be breached, and the person trying to defend their data with that security breach would be the last to know. They would be the last people, and the hackers are in there doing damage. There have been cases of kids sitting in their basement hacking in and playing war games on the Defense Department computers. Kids. Yeah, real secure boys, defense boys, mill boys up there in the, you know, with your five stars and all your brass. Yeah, real, real secure with U.S. public's information. Anyway, that's a whole giant mess, which leads me into the next topic. Just released F-35 Lightning II jet fighter. It's a vertical takeoff aircraft carrier, mainly for the Navy, these vertical takeoff craft. But there's been an advertisement roaming around the internet. They have an actual web page. It's you can go look at it if you want. It's called www.f35.com. And notice it's not .gov, it's .com. This is a venture. This is a money-making venture. You've got Northrop Grumman, Pratt Whitney, McDonnell Douglas, global, and they're talking about global participation. This is for all our allies. Well, sure, all our allies don't have aircraft carriers that could handle this kind of a vehicle. But they're saying Australia, Canada, Denmark, Israel, Italy, Japan, Netherlands, Norway, Turkey, United Kingdom, USA, and Korea. Well, of all of those countries that are profiting and part of this so-called Global Participation Coalition for the F-35 Lightning II vertical takeoff jet, how many of them have aircraft carriers that could house one of these vehicles? Well, just a couple, three, have aircraft carriers that one of these things would ever even sit on. But you can see it's all about the money. Everybody gets a piece of the pie. Isn't that swell? So then they have a little web page where they want the people, you out there, to comment. And I read some of the blogs, and they're pretty weak. It's like, yeah, this is really great. And I'm sure that those people are in the line to make money off of this. Maybe they got stock in it. At any rate, the old military-industrial complex marches on. Okay, but that's something to look at. I've got a new book that I'm releasing, and it's coming out July 4th. I said when I released my last book, Comets, that I would have another book shortly thereafter on its heels. And so that book, it's not easy to release two books at the same time. It's rather confusing. So I took a bit of time for everybody to digest the Comets book. And so right now I'm in the pre-sale stage of the new ebook. It's going to be an ebook format, and I will announce the title Thursday, July 4th, on my radio show. I will be announcing the title of the new book. And this book takes on a new attitude, a new tack, a new direction in my books. I've been very critical of governments in the past. I've been very pointed about my discussions. I present my science work. And I'll be honest with you, it would be a lot nicer for me if there was no NASA, if there was no government. The science that is done under the government umbrella is very political, let's put it that way. That's a very polite word. So my ability to present my material, to get data, to do research based on the vast amounts of money that is put out for scientific instrumentation, satellites, etc., simply is not available to the public. And so what I'm doing at this point, however, is making a statement. We cannot wait any longer for this government charade to wake up and somehow produce. It'll never happen. The tier two levels of science produced by the government are there for a reason. They're there to block progress. Global warming, global climate change now, as they call it, is a farce. And it's going to be there for a long time. Those scientists are very entrenched. They're getting their money. And the global climate change concept is very usable for the world leaders. So that isn't going to change. So as a public, we simply have to bypass all of that. You don't have to write a congressman because they're bought and paid for. They don't have any concept of science. All they are looking at are political motivations and political results. Who's going to vote for them if they say something about ecology? I've made a posting that the environmental protection agencies are really environmental pollution agencies. They're calculated allowed amounts of pollution don't acknowledge the concept of cumulative pollution, that a little bit this year and a little bit next year and a little bit the next year on all the different chemicals and pollutants that are out there add up to significant pollution. And so as a result, our society is completely polluted, including the people, the water, the plants, you know, the study, for example, when the Fukushima reactor fiasco occurred in Japan, a team of so-called government specialists ran out there, and they put their finger up in the air, and they said, oh, there's not that much radiation here. Goodbye, see you later, wrote their report. And they don't understand that the cumulative radiation, it adds up. It doesn't go away. And so the rain that's coming in the United States, it's very clear that that radiation is still in the environment. It's still in the Pacific Ocean. But you will never hear that from a government agency, because they have to make everything nice. They have to make it sound like it's within acceptable levels. What's acceptable level of pollution? It's an absurd concept. Just the concept of feeding that to the public, that the public should accept some kind of allowed amount of pollution, is absurd. I mean, just think about it. Allowed levels of pollution. Okay, and then next year, that same allowed level of pollution is going to occur. The next year also. There's no such thing as a recycle bank for pills. People don't finish their prescription pills. So what do? They throw it down the toilet, flush it, and that goes, gee, you know, they don't realize that the processing plant for sewage doesn't take out all those chemicals, so that gets dumped back in the water table. And so when you take a drink of water out of your faucet, you are drinking antibiotics, people's prescriptions, who knows what all is in the water you're drinking. And of course, I did a water study many years ago now, and I went to the local water suppliers, the cities, and I said, I want to know what testing you do. Oh, we do the standard federal testing every month. We have to send in a report. Well, who does that? Oh, well, just a worker. Okay, so they put it in the water in a bottle, send it away, and I said, okay, I want to talk to the laboratories to do the testing. Oh, why would you want to do that? It's all government, controlled, and why would you ever want to talk to them? And my answer is because I want to know. I want to know what they're doing, what they're looking for. Well, they had a very controlled list, and very, very short list, of substances that they monitored in the city water. And so anyway, I said, well, what if I want to test the water? Oh, well, why would you want to do that? We already do it. So anyway, I started looking around for companies, chemical analysis companies, that would look for the water pollution and tell you what's in the water. So they're all like, yeah, we really have a good company, and it's the best nationally known and with the highest qualifications and standards, etc. Okay, well, send me your packet so I can get the water samples and send them to you. And so anyway, comes back in a very short list, and I said, well, no, I want to know everything that's in this water. I want you as a chemical company to do an analysis and tell me what's in the water. And they said, what do you mean? I said, everything that's not H2O, I want to know what it is. Oh, well, we don't do that. You have to specify from a list items that you want to search for, and then you have to pay extra for every item you want to search for. And I said, well, don't you analyze water from the cities that, you know, why, yes, we do it with all of the federal standards. Well, the end result is that the water is not tested, and they don't have any ability to test and really tell you what's in the water. So anyway, that's just an example. But this is all done under the sanction of the Environmental Protection Agency. I call it the Environmental Pollution Agency. And what do? If some big corporation is polluting, oh, they give them a $1 million fine. Here's a company, you know, multi-billion dollar profit a year company, and they give them a little hand slap fine. Now, they're there to promote pollution. They're there to allow pollution, to write something on a piece of paper that it's okay. So at any rate, we have to take a brand new direction as people, because the government ain't gonna do it. So anyway, my new book takes on this new direction. And I will be announcing the title on July 4th of this year. It's up for pre-sale right now. The pre-sale price is $13.95, so go to my webpage, jmccsci.com. And there's three ways to purchase the book. One is the direct pre-sale, pre-release sale price at $13.95. Secondly, if you buy all of the other books, the e-books, and now there are six. I'm adding Comets, the recently released book Comets, to the list. And so there are six e-books, and for $69, you can get all of the previous e-books. And so you would receive those now, and then when the new book is released July 4th, you would receive that. That's the second way to purchase the book. And this is all explained on the webpage. The third way is if you purchase $250 of any combination of products from the secure web ordering page, then you get all of the ebooks free. You'll get the current set of ebooks, the six that exist right now, you'll get those for right away. And when the new book is released on July 4th, you will get that book with the instructions on how to download it. So at any rate, I'm rather excited about this new book. The new book is very, very important because it presents my science work. And this is a rather new topic, a new direction in topic, but also a new direction in attitude. And so this is something that I'm not talking about organizing big groups of people and having meetings. These are things that you as individuals should be doing and can be doing. And in this way, I've talked about a concept before. I call it First Nation. And the concept is that the people have to live their own democracy. You can't write to a congressman. You can't call the president. He's not listening to you. He's got his own agenda. You are bought and paid for commodity as a person in this society. So the only way you can deal with this, the police are there to give you traffic tickets. If something happens, they'll come and fill out a report and walk away. They don't solve any crimes. They're not going to prevent you from being robbed or whatever. They'll just come thereafter if you're still alive and write a report and walk away. So there's no help there. You have to live your own democracy. You have to, and that's the concept. So that's the basis for my new book, that we have to take and stage by stage take control of the world. And so if you organize, the first thing that's going to happen is that the NSA, that Homeland Security, they're going to be worried about you forming a cult. You get more than five people together, it's a cult today. If you sit down with your neighbors and talk, you're a cult leader. Oh, geez. But anyway, my concept is just eliminate all of that phony baloney and live your own democracy. And with everybody living their own democracy, it's kind of like the pioneer days. They didn't write to Congress. They just went out and they had to live their lives. They had a daily set of chores they had to do to just exist. So this is the way people have to be today. It's the only way to conquer and deal. And then to boot, 95% of the people walking up and down the street are like zombies. They don't even know what's going on. They don't even have a clue. They don't have any clue what's going on this planet or around them or even down the street. So, you know, you have to, and you're not going to go out and change those people. They're stupid. They want to stay stupid. And that's the bottom line. So you can't It's not like you can go out and preach. And I always tell people, don't preach the things that I'm talking about here. People who want to understand what's going on and change their lives and realize the ridiculous state that this world has gotten itself into, depending on the leaders, well, the only thing you can do, you're not going to cure this world. It's a train wreck that's happening. It's already happened, and it's going to get worse. So the only thing you can do is take care of yourself and your immediate family. That's it. So visit my webpage, jmccsci.com, and sign up for the new book. Now, the new book will sell for $16.95 after the release on July 4th. So you can save a few dollars and be in the initial email shipping of this book and get the download information on July 4th. Okay, so on to the main science topic. First, I want to mention, I forgot this, I put a posting on my webpage. NASA has not presented any real information that Comet Ison will be the comet of the century. They're saying that the nucleus of this comet is a couple kilometers across. And I've looked and looked and tried to find information that would put this comet apart from other comets. And I can't find it. And so there's two possibilities. First of all, it's not going to be the comet of the century. Second of all, it's going to be the comet of the century, and they're lying about the nucleus. Clearly, a 2-kilometer nucleus is very small compared to known standards. Halley's Comet had a 7-kilometer nucleus and was a very small comet, is a very small comet. Comet Hale-Bopp had a 42-kilometer nucleus, according to NASA, and I think it was much bigger. Comet Hale-Bopp, I believe, had a almost a moon size, like the size of our moon nucleus. But and that's why it would have had a companion. Of course, I've talked about those issues. I'm not going to go into all that again. But Comet Ison, they're saying, has a 2-kilometer nucleus. So their estimate of nucleus is all over the board. They said Comet Lovejoy had a 600-foot, 200-meter diameter, and that caused the tail bigger than any that had been seen before. And it went through the sun, and when it came out the other side, people on Earth could see the nucleus with their naked eye next to the sun, bigger than Mercury. So clearly NASA's story is not adding up. And so that's all I'm saying. Comet Ison might be the comet of the century, but that NASA has not presented any real information that would suggest it would be. So either they're hiding information or there's something funny going on, let's put it this way. And I suspect that that is the answer, that they're hiding information about the size of this nucleus, and they've been studying it for a long time prior to its announcement last September. Oh, I also want to mention there's some new water filter products on my webpage, and it's a little addition, not a big deal, but for people who use the gravity feed water filters in your kitchen every day, there's an option now, and they're fairly inexpensive. There's two models. These are continuous flow, continuous supply sink top water filters, and they connect with a little hose to your faucet and have a filter element that filters out the standard filtration, just like my name branded 7-inch candles. Now, the filter inside this canister is different in format, so you cannot use your current candles. You have to, and these units come with a single filter element when you purchase them, and then you can purchase other ones. The filter elements last about 6 months. But the advantage here also is it filters out fluoride and arsenic within the same filter element. So that's something interesting. And then you get continuous filtration. As long as you push the button on the side of this unit, you will get filtered water. And so that's kind of a handy thing. If you use a lot of water in the kitchen, especially in the summertime, the kids are drinking water, everybody's using a lot of water. It's just an issue of convenience. And so, mind you, this does not take place of an emergency filter. This is not an emergency setup, because it relies on the pressure in your kitchen tap, the faucet, to function. But it's a matter of convenience. So those are on the webpage. The plastic housing model, I believe, is $131. It includes shipping, comes with one filter element. You can buy the second filter element for, I think it's $57, or additional filter elements. They last about 6 months. They take out the fluoride and arsenic right in the single filter element. And the stainless steel housing, I believe, is about $210, including shipping. And the plastic and the stainless steel are exactly the same, except one has a plastic housing. The stainless steel has stainless steel housing. Okay, so that's there. And additionally, I have a new filter element that's available in the 7-inch format that is the same situation. It takes out the fluoride and arsenic, and you no longer need that other second canister down below, hanging down in the bottom of your gravity feed water filter. So that's just another option that's available. Some people, I'm going to continue to sell the second canister add-on fluoride arsenic filter. The new filters cost more, but cost-wise and as far as the length of time filtration, they will last about the same time, about 6 months, and then you swap them out. So at any rate, both of those available on my webpage. Also, you can buy in bulk. You can buy 10 dome filters or 10 of the 7-inch Saracil filters. You can buy them 10 at a time now and save some money. Also, the fluoride arsenic add-on filters are available 10 at a time. With bulk pricing. So that's all new on the webpage, jmccsci.com. Okay, off to talk about the sun and solar spectrum. Something very strange is going on with the sun. It's putting out a tremendous amount of UV light, and we're still having a very cool spring, which means that the sun is not putting out as much energy in the part that heats up the earth. That's the infrared and the visible, primarily the visible light. The infrared, a lot of that is filtered out in the atmosphere. That's why, for example, when you're looking at outer space, objects in outer space with infrared cameras, you have to get up above the atmosphere to do it. A lot of that infrared is filtered out in our atmosphere. So the main part of the spectrum that heats up the earth, that gives us a warmth, so to speak, is in the near visible, the visible and near visible range of the electromagnetic spectrum. The UV coming in excess quantities now, it's just about off scale every day, and it has been consistent for weeks now. The amount of ultraviolet energy coming in is disproportionate with what is known as a black body. Now, I talked about this last week. I kind of introduced the topic, and I said I'll be doing some more studying on this. But the sun is not responding the way it theoretically should be responding. So I'll present a couple scientific quagmires here for you to ponder. The standard model for the sun, the one if you went to college or graduate student as a graduate student in physics, or if you someone told you from standard scientific community, if you asked how does the sun work, what's the model for the sun, they would say, well, deep in the core, there's a fusion engine based on the pressure of the in the center of the sun, And that has been burning for 4.5 billion years, and it's constant, and that's where the source of energy for the sun is. It's a completely incorrect idea, and it should have never been promoted in the first place, because the amount of energy leaving the sun, simply making a simple calculation, and this is something that you learn in freshman physics the first day you walk in the door, if you went to a good school. And a lot of the big name schools are not good schools. They're mass production. They teach, you know, a lot of material, but most of the students come out without good analysis capability. They can answer all of the problems in the textbook, but they don't know how to analyze a problem. And I knew people like this when I was in college. They could get all A's on paper that looked good, but they had no clue how to analyze a real-world problem. And this is a problem with physics and graduate school education. Physics, astrophysics, astronomy, space science, geology. The students can pass the test. They have become good at passing tests. They're excellent. I call them textbook geniuses. They can read the textbook, and they've learned the process to get an A. But get them out in the real world, and they freeze up, and they have no clue what to do. And one of the first big examples of that, like, just take hurricane analysis. How many meteorologists, physicists, etc., have gone through school, gotten their degrees, and are out there working in the real world, and have never imagined that the energy that it takes to form a tornado or a hurricane is not in the source that they're talking about. And the source of, is in the case of hurricanes, the warm water concept that somehow warm water in the ocean forms hurricane is absurd. It's so beyond absurd because there's just not enough energy there to form a hurricane or to sustain it. And how do you get the energy from the warm water into the hurricane? It's beyond absurd. Why isn't every storm that comes across the ocean in the summertime a hurricane? Well, they can't explain any of this, but they'll tell you all day that warm water is the source of hurricanes. The same with tornadoes. A single tornado has more energy in it than the sunlight that hits the entire state in the course of a day. How can tornadoes form at night if they're formed from sunlight? You know, it's so absurd. We have hurricanes that have been observed on Mars. Mars doesn't have any oceans. How do these form? The most powerful hurricanes in history occurred in winter in the middle of the North Atlantic Ocean. The perfect storm was a combination of three storms that formed during severe winter conditions, the October storms, the October 31st Halloween storms. Three of them joined up in the North Frigid, North Atlantic Ocean, to create the biggest hurricane in history, and then the North Atlantic. Where's the warm water, boys? You know, it's just so ridiculous. This is standard fare for government science. It's so beyond absurd that, you know, anyway, that's not the point. The point is that the core model of the sun is equally absurd. A very simple calculation would show that if you look at the light that's leaving the sun, okay, and the amount of energy leaving the sun across the electromagnetic spectrum. This is not counting the electrical energy. This is just the electromagnetic spectrum energy, what we call light. And you calculate that, it's called the solar constant. It's the amount of energy leaving the sun at a given time, and per square meter or whatever. If you calculate the total amount of energy leaving the sun on a constant basis, and then you go backwards and you say, okay, that energy had to come from converted matter, E equals mc squared, there's not enough mass in the entire sun to power this solar light for 4.5 billion years, the estimated age of our sun. How could science promote a concept that couldn't possibly be true? in its very simple first level 101 physics energy calculation would prove that it couldn't possibly be true. But it's promoted as in all of the other physics, the solar physics that radiates from this, that comes, is generated from this, all of that solar physics is based on this concept that's patently false, couldn't possibly be true in 4.5 billion years. So, at any rate, what is going on with the sun? Okay, so then around the late 1990s, Congress and the scientific community realized they had a problem. They did not have data on the solar output. So they wanted to measure it, so they get their best team of physicists, scientists, etc. together, and they want to measure the solar output. And to do this, of course, the best way to do it is to build a satellite, put it up in outer space, away from Earth's atmosphere. We have about 50 sun monitoring stations around the world, and they monitor the solar light, etc. But they have to deal with cloud cover, atmospheric conditions, nighttime when the sun doesn't shine. So the ground-based solar observatories are kind of okay, but they really don't give you what you would call real good information. So the scientists got together and designed a spacecraft. It's called SORS. Okay, the name of the satellite is currently called and is currently under is called SORS, the Solar Radiation and Climate Experiment. And so the other problem here is they assumed a result that the sun's changing atmosphere would be very slow over long periods of time. So that's the way the instrumentation was designed on the spacecraft, thinking that over an 11-year period it might change by a little bit due to the solar cycle, and then looking for minor changes in that over extremely long periods of time. So the satellite was launched in 2003, and they started taking data, collecting data and sampling data and storing data, and etc. And around 2007, they came to a stark realization. And that is that on an hourly basis, someone finally started noticing, and I bet you people had this data existed for this whole time, from 2003 to 2007. Somebody said, hey, by the way, the sun's output is changing sometimes on a minute-to-minute basis by 1,000 times. So this concept that a 0.1% change over an 11-year cycle, that's what they're looking at. And here the sun is wildly changing on a minute-to-minute basis. And so they all go and they scratch their heads and they go, well, they go back into what we call modeling land. They can't explain the data. It doesn't make any sense to any of them because it's counter, it's against any concepts that they might have on how the sun works. How could the sun possibly be changing on a minute-to-minute basis? And the very concept that the core energy is what is producing the heat of the sun, we did the calculations, and this is a standard college-level physics problem. Given the heat production of the core of the sun, how long does it take that energy to reach the surface of the sun? Okay, well, the answer is about 1 million years. It takes that long for the energy produced in this alleged core to get to the surface. Well, in that process, it becomes very uniform. So the uniformity of the solar surface is a main result of that concept of core fusion of the sun. Back in the 50s, they looked at the sun and it just looked like a big orange ball up there. They had no knowledge of the solar wind. They had no knowledge of the surface features of the sun. And so they did not have any clue of what was going on the surface. All of a sudden, they get good satellites up there that can take pictures of the solar surface, and they're seeing all of this solar surface definition rapidly changing, but the model, the core model, doesn't change. Well, how could it not change? So they start introducing all kinds of, well, magnetic effects and this and that, none of which explain what is really going on. And then I come along in the late 1970s at Cornell, and I'm realizing that this core model can't possibly be correct, that the fusion of the sun is at the surface, that the energy is very localized and very rapidly changing based on localized explosions, coronal holes opening up, allowing the solar wind to pour out, and the entire surface model of the sun is electrical. It has nothing to do with gravitational pressure at all. Then the Russians come along in 1995, they translated my work, and they perform a very simple experiment. They take an X-ray detector, start scanning across the limb of the sun from one side, and as they go and look deeper and deeper down into the atmosphere of the sun, they realize that there's a solid core in there. And it's pretty big. It's a pretty big solid core. And it's the same temperature, and it's cooler than the upper surface of the solar atmosphere. The core of the sun is cooler. So the energy isn't coming from the core. You can measure it. But in the West, they don't want to do that because it contradicts everything, all of the published papers. And this is standard in science, that when you get to those big contradictions, they can't handle it, so they just continue. So in 2007, the SOURCE satellite, they realized that the sun is changing on a minute-to-minute basis, and they just kind of shut it down and go away and don't say anything. So now here you are on the surface of the Earth dealing with your skin absorbing ultraviolet radiation causing cancer. The solar irradiation in the ultraviolet can change on a minute-to-minute basis, and nobody's telling you this. Nobody's telling you that 1 minute you're getting an okay level of, or what is thought to be an okay level of ultraviolet radiation, and the next minute you're getting blasted with enough radiation to basically cause cancer and change your DNA. Nobody is telling you about this. So anyway, that's why a lot of people listen to this show. So the question is, what is going on with the sun? Okay, so let me give you the correct model for the operation of the sun. And also, as a result of this, the sun cannot continue producing energy at this level for 4.5 billion years. Currently, or obviously, it has produced energy for a very long time. So there's only one result that you can derive from that, and that is that the sun's hydrogen source is constantly being renewed. It's a engine. It's a constant engine based on being fueled from outside. So the hydrogen has to come into the sun, and this is a very strange problem, because the fuel for the sun has to come on a constant basis. So that means that the sun, on a long-term basis, is depending on its source of hydrogen fuel from outer space, from the surrounding galactic environment. So that's a very complex physics problem. Stars sometimes explode, and that's because, once again, that's an electrical interaction. And I'm starting to become of the opinion that comets, that the big comets that come in around the sun, and I think our sun is fairly stable, so, and we've had some big comets come near the sun, but there are some stars that have other conditions that make them less stable. So when a large comet comes in, discharges the solar capacitor, it's enough to cause that sun to ignite. In other words, the entire solar surface. We have what we call CMEs, coronal mass ejections, where the entire sun explodes on kind of a mini pop. But when we observe stars in others in the galaxy, every now and then one of them really unloads and the whole star just boom, the whole atmosphere explodes at one time. And so I'm wondering if this could be an effect of comets. The comets, the solar discharge of the discharge of the solar capacitor. And this is something that would have to be observed, and hopefully it's not something we're going to observe here, but we could possibly observe this in other solar systems. A large comet comes in, maybe does some planetary alignments, and bam, you have a big electrical discharge that comes in and sets off the sun, or the star in that case, on a wide-scale basis, and boom. The whole star ignites, a fusion, a major fusion explosion. Is this a possibility? But like I say, we have seen big comets come around our sun. We've seen major solar eruptions from these comets interacting with the sun, but none that would suggest that that our entire sun would explode all at one time. So there again, what's the solar physics for this? What's the? There's so many regions. This is also for young people out there. There are so many regions of science that need discovery, that need analysis, and it's wide open because the current state of knowledge of what we call Western knowledge is just completely wrong. So we need a whole new batch of scientists that basically go in and route out the bad stuff and start doing real science out there. One of the problems you'd meet is as you became, as you went higher in your education, starting to get up to the PhD level, you're going to get hooked into one of these universities that teaches bad science, and you have to accept that to get your degree. If you don't, you wouldn't get a degree. Okay, so I'm going to finalize what I'm talking about, the solar output. The solar output is variable. We're measuring it. The last measurements we've gotten were 2007, when the scientists on this project simply went away and never reported again because they know that everything they had been doing, their satellite design was incorrect, everything that they had been doing was incorrect. But it is still quoted as the source of information for solar energy output. Remember that, go to my webpage, I have the new water filter products. Go to the webpage, jmccsci.com, short for jmccsci.com. And the new book, the new e-book will be announced on July 4th. Order your pre-release copy for just $13.95 right now. Or order all of the books at $69. You get the previous six ebooks right now, and then the new ebook will be sent to you by email, the instructions to download, on July 4th. And this is a very important upcoming book. This is a very important book that's coming up on July 4th. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.